our property manager told us the word on the street is this place, it used to be called the Stockton Apartments, is a bad place. It's where drug dealers, and it's just not a place where people want to live. But once that changes, that it's a good place, there's good management, they're going to take care of you, it's going to be crazy. And she was so right.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Hey, welcome back to the Multifamily Money Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm happy to have you here. On today's episode, we have power couple Patty and David Royster. These two left corporate America behind and decided to go all in on real estate. End of 2019, they bought their first 100-plus unit multifamily complex. And Patty and David go in on this episode and tell us how they got there and what it takes to operate a 100-plus unit community. They do have third-party management, but they take more a hands-on approach than I would say most people do that have third-party management. They live in Utah, but their property is in Oklahoma, and they'll actually drive out during the week on weekends, see the progress of the property and make sure everything is going well. So they're going to share their battle scars and their wounds that they've had on this one. And they also attribute a lot of their success, they tell us, to networking and always adding and bringing value to any type of relationship or partnership that they're in. So this is a really good one. If you're in the situation where you really want to get into multifamily, maybe you're working a corporate job or doing your own, have your own business, but you really want to break in to the multifamily space, this is an episode you want to listen to. So let's get into it.
Hey, welcome, David and Patty. How are you?
We're doing great. Yeah. Thanks for inviting us.
Hey, thank you for coming on. It's really, really great to have you guys on. You guys have some great information to share with everyone. So thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Yep. So how's everything in Utah?
Hot.
Hot.
Yeah. It's hot on the East Coast too.
Yeah.
Let's just get into it here. I did a brief intro before, so we'll just get right into this. Just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, how you got to where you are today, and then we'll jump into your first deal.
Okay. You want me to start up, Patty?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. So we actually started real estate way back before we were married. I bought my first rental property then. And so we had that for a long time, and we were involved in rental properties from there. So about, was it 6-7 years ago, I decided to go full-time. I actually got laid off. It was a great day for me and made it to where I was doing now full-time real estate. It's been just so fun to work alongside my wife, Patty, and just have brainstorming ideas and do things and have freedom and be able to see the rewards. You know, you flip a home and you make some money, you get rentals going and they go great too. So it's been a lot of fun journey.
Yeah, I'm, if you want to hear about me too. So for like 20 years, I raised 4 kids. And about 8 years ago, I moved to Arizona, got my real estate license, lived there for a year, and then moved here, and then he got laid off. So we've been working together for 7 years, and we haven't killed each other yet. We're doing pretty good. My group is, yeah, like, there's not very many husband-wife teams that can work together without killing each other.
That's so true. You guys are killing the game, not each other, so it's an important distinction. That's awesome, though. There must be a reason why you love multifamily, David. Instead, you know, you got laid off. Instead of seeking a similar career, you went all in on real estate and multifamily. Could you just explain to the listeners why you did that and why you love multifamily?
So we did start off with multifamily. We started off with flips and single family and even Airbnb. But we had someone that was in our community and one of the local REITs that talked about a 10x multiplier. So if you think I can make a $10,000 on this deal, another digit, and that's how much you'll make if you do multifamily or rental income. And so we got very interested in doing that as well. And the other thing too is that because I had a corporate job for a long time, I had 401k money. And with that, there's a lot of restrictions what you do with it. And so even though I made it self-directed, it's like if you flip a home, you can't do the work yourself. If you have a rental, you have to have a property manager. And then it just got to be where I was very concerned that I was going to get myself in trouble. And so we wanted something more passive. And so that's why we jumped in with Corey Peterson as a passive investor in multifamily deal. So that's kind of how we got started with Corey Peterson. And as an investor, not as an active.
We wanted to just kind of watch him and be able to ask questions and see what he did and just learn a lot from him going through the process.
I think that's a great way to start. Just like you said, you get to see how a seasoned operator works ins and out of his business, and you're not putting yourself out there at first, because you're right, it does 10x your money, but it can also 10x your problems if you don't know what you're doing. So I think it's very smart to start off as on the LP side. But what I commend you both in is that you know you wanted to do this. You did start off on the LP side, but you didn't just remain an LP investor, because I think that happens to a lot of people, because they see all the work. They might get scared. They really want to do it, but they don't take that step. But you two jumped right in and acquired 100+ unit facility. Like, you'll hear a lot of people out there say like, oh, start small, maybe get like a 20 to 50, get your toes wet. But to me, what's the point? It's essentially the same thing. How you acquire, how you operate, how you dispose. Why not just go to the 100+? Economies of scale are obviously much better at that size. Like I said, I think it's very impressive what you both did. Could you just tell us how that deal came about, like how you found that deal?
Yeah, so we went and got some more training on how to become multifamily investors. And we like to network. So we went out to dinner with several people, and there was one guy there that had a lot of energy. And as you know, it's really easy for people to want to do this. And it's such a long-term play that it's easy to put off those daily things. So I'm like, hey, why don't we get this guy and we'll be accountability partners? So every Monday night, we would get on and kind of discuss multifamily, but then also say what we had done for the week in multifamily. So he had told us about this deal. We thought it was going to go through with a property manager in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but they couldn't come up with the money. So David asked him, he said, hey, what about that deal? And so we kind of resurrected this deal and thought, I think we could pull this together. And we looked at the numbers. We had many, many conversations, learned a lot. It was kind of like drinking from a fire hose, figured out how to close the deal. And we bought it on his birthday, December 11th.
Great birthday present.
Yeah. Like, how many women can give their husband 107 units on their birthday?
Not many.
Yeah, it's been great. And we've learned, just like anything in life, you learn by doing. And we've made some mistakes, but we've learned a ton. So next time around, we're going to hit the gate, floor running.
But you know, what really helped us is we had education. So we went to that boardroom that Corey had. So we had some foundation of information that really was helpful. And then we networked, and networking goes a long ways. And then we had different resources that we knew actually through Corey that we used initially for the first deal. So we had a lot of experts that were paying money to, that were giving us advice and direction to get going on it too. So we walked in with some support structure to help us get through that first deal.
That's great. Yeah, networking is so important on, you know, all aspects of this business, whether it be networking with other investor operators or investors, passive investors and brokers. I can't say enough about networking. That obviously worked for you to find a deal. So I commend you on that.
And I would give one tip for people. Like, don't just suck all the knowledge out of somebody. You got to be a giver too. Not mm-hmm. that we, you know what I mean? Like, you know how some people just come up and bombard you with questions? Like, use the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Yep. The Giver's Game. I think a lot of people could read that book in the world today.
Yeah.
I try to read that book once a year. I think it's, cause you always can pick something up every time you read it.
The Giver's Game?
No, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Yeah, it's called The Giver's Game, that you shouldn't just go into, like, whether you're trying to network or find a mentor by asking, you should give, bring some value to the table.
Yeah.
So you found this deal through networking. Was it a syndication?
It was, yes.
Okay, so can you tell the listeners how that went, raising money for your first deal?
Yeah, actually, I think I'm just barely recovering now. I mean, it was extremely stressful because we had some money because we sold the property. So we had some money that we could put into the deal, but we had to raise $1.1 million. And obviously we didn't have that much money to put in on our own on that. So we kind of divided up with our partner to raise one half and us the other half. We're all inexperienced. Right. And so we were tracking. I had this investor says that he's going to contribute this much. I asked for probabilities and they were pretty high. Well, down to the last day, except for our money and maybe a little more, no one came to game.
Really?
We did, yeah. So we were like, this is really crazy. So we had to go through, we were able to raise some more money. So we were able to get more people involved. But part of it was we just had to go into our lines of credit and drain those initially to get the money.
Yeah. And then backfill later.
And I seriously, if I could have walked away at that point, I would have.
Really?
We had money on the table.
We had a loss,
at least $100,000, probably like $150,000. And it's like, I didn't feel like I wanted to lose that much money. So it was freaking very stressful.
Yeah.
For me. And I really broke out in the hives.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So I had allergy pills to recover from it 6 months later.
So wow.
It really was stressful.
Well, hey, it worked out in the end.
Yeah. I'm so happy we did it now, but it was very stressful. So, no, we didn't dial in how to raise money. We've been working on that since then. But
well, that's important. Well, you closed a deal. Not a lot of people can say that.
Yeah.
I guess what's your number one tip for people that are, you know, going to raise money for the first time, especially, you know, a million plus?
I would say that if people are going to raise money for you, make sure they've done it before. If they've never raised a dime, then they're going to probably raise a dime for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If they don't have a track record, then I wouldn't even talk to them.
Right. Unless you see the cash in a bank account, make sure there's some record there.
Yes. Yes. And because this was our first rodeo, we've been successful in our other ventures, but we've never done this before. So you don't have as much confidence. But now that we've done this before, we've closed, we crossed the finish line, and then we've solved all these problems in this property, we have a ton of confidence. Like, yeah, we did this once. We can do it again. No problem. So it'll be way easier to raise money next time.
I mean, all of us that walked into that one deal had zero experience multifamily.
Yeah.
And so asking for money when you have zero experience is harder. Now, the next deal we do, it's going to be a heck of a lot easier. And we're also doing a lot of work, effort to network right now on it. So maybe on that first deal as an active investor, you might want to be partnered with someone that has experience that's done a deal before too.
Right. Yeah. I think that's definitely important. One, for so you can raise the money. And then two, you can kind of, because as an LP, you do see how things go. But as another active GP investor, you definitely see more how things go. So I think that's very important too, just to gain that experience. And what's going to happen is you're going to give up money to do that. It's going to be expensive for you to do that. But I think that's very important. Like for the listeners, like what I mean by that is David and Patty, they are the lead GP. So they're going to get a good chunk of their deal. But if you partner with someone who has a lot of experience, they're not going to give you a good chunk of the deal because that's just the way it is. They have the experience. They don't need you. They're kind of throwing you a bone per se. So you're not going to get as big of a chunk, but what you're going to get is see how someone seasoned operates. And I think that's very important.
And credibility as well.
Yeah.
To help you for that next deal.
Yeah. Definitely. And we thought about giving away some of ours and partnering with somebody, but we've got an experienced partner who's flipped over 400 homes and
wow.
He just kind of had a feeling like, yeah, I think we can do this.
Yep.
Let's do it on our own.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So Patty, you kind of touched on this. Now you kind of have that confidence. So now you know how you're going to attack it differently. That must feel really good that we've done this. We can go out there and show this. So are you going to attack the raising capital differently next time?
We already are.
Yeah, we already are. We're just
I like that answer.
Yeah. So right now we're actually not looking to buy anything unless some killer amazing deal comes across our desk.
Yeah.
So we're just kind of building connections with people. Looking to raise more money, having conversations, putting our podcast together so people can know, like, and trust us, and looking to raise more money so that I believe real estate's gone up for like the last 10 years. It can't. It goes in cycles. It goes up, it goes down. And there's been a lot of people who have bought poorly in multifamily that I think are going to be getting out of it in the next 6 months or a year, maybe a year and a half.
I agree.
It'll be great buying opportunities.
You know, another thing too is on the property we do own right now that it's doing really well. We'll talk about it later. But one of the things that we're up for maybe getting an award for being the most improved property in Tulsa or something like that. So
that's awesome.
Once we get that, that will help us a lot for raising money too. So that is part of our focus too. We got to do really well on our first deal. And if we get some award for doing that, all the better, right? Because that'll
that's
make
smart.
A lot of credibility for next help.
Definitely. Well, I guess let's just get into the deal then. So what type of play is this? Is it a buy and hold, a flip, value add, reposition?
It's definitely a value add. Yeah. Do you want to say more?
Yeah. So when we bought it, when we went under contract, what was it? 35% off?
No, there was 30. There's like 35 vacant.
35 vacant units out of 107. It's dipped as low as 50% since we bought it. But we're hoping to hit 90% by the end of August, mid-August.
Wow. What are you at now?
82%.
Wow. That's impressive. From 50 to 82 in a few months. In the middle of a pandemic?
And we're leased up like 12 a month.
Wow.
So it's been phenomenal.
Our property manager is so busy.
Yeah.
So busy. So really what happened was, it's kind of a long story. We had a general contractor. They saw that we have had a bunch of money for rehab. They went in before we even told them about the paint colors, started painting all our railings and did shoddy work. And we weren't happy with them. So we had to fire them. They were associated with our property management company. So we had to fire them and find another general contractor who could work under their license.
They were referred, not associated. So they're not part of the property management company. They were suggested at GC to us to work with. Yeah.
How did the property manager take that? Were they fine?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so then we had to work under another GC license. So we went and found our own subs. Saved us a ton of money. We went out
for
2 weeks, found the electrician, found the plumber, found the drywaller, and got this system going. So we would do like 5 apartments at a time. And we got the system going, and then we trained our property manager, or she figured it out how to do it. And then just did 5 at a time and just kept plugging along. And now we've renovated 32, 37, something like that.
Oh, that's great. How much will rent increase because of that?
That's the cool thing.
It's $100. It was $4.99, and we had a special made it $5.99. We wanted to get more than that, but they're looking right now that we could probably use $640 or more.
Wow, that's great.
It's going up quite a bit. And like I said, it's leased up like crazy. Maybe we should be charging more now. We already are. We have some that have brick walls, and they're really beautiful accent wall. So they've already been charging more for those units because they do have a lot more appeal on that.
Is it a complete rehab of the units?
$5,700 a unit is what we're putting into it.
Okay.
So it's not a complete rehaul. We're doing a lot with that $5,700. Mm-hmm. So all new flooring, paint, the countertops are made perfect. They're resurfaced, but the bathtubs are made perfect.
The new toilet.
And the new appliances in the kitchen. So they really look nice. And then we also, Patty staged one of them or furnished one of them that looks beautiful. So that, and we have that on the video. So one of the things with COVID is that they didn't go in all the time. They would be able to watch the video and see how nice the units look. And so having that furniture in there made a big difference. So they were much more willing to do it. So we were killing it during COVID because people could see what we had.
That's great. Got to be flexible. So I guess let's just jump into that. How, other than that, how has COVID affected you and the property?
I think there might have been one person who either didn't pay their rent or moved out.
No, there's like three or four were late, some that recovered. So we had a few tenants that struggled with COVID, but really not that many. And we were very grateful at the time that we had a lot of Section 8 in our unit.
That's true.
That really helped us a lot.
Yeah, I bet.
Because we were getting money regardless of that. And we had a lot of bad tenants. And so, you know, our delinquencies have been high, but they weren't high because of COVID. They were high because we had bad tenants.
Right.
So we were working to get rid of them. You know, we're still like, there's still a few more that we'd love to phase out at some point, but so much better than it was before.
It sounds like it. When you're leasing 12 up a month, guys are doing something right.
Yeah.
I like you turning a cruise ship around, if anybody's ever been on a cruise ship. It falls into dock. You can just barely see it moving on the horizon.
Yeah.
And so you just barely make all these little changes. And then all of a sudden it's like, shazam. So our property manager told us, hey, look, right now the word on the street is this place, it used to be called the Stockton Apartments, is a bad place. It's where drug dealers, and it's just not a place where people want to live. But once that changes, the word on the street is that it's a good place, there's good management, they're going to take care of you, it's going to be crazy. And she was so right. It's been crazy.
That's great. And that's one thing I love about multifamily is that not only can you provide a great investment for your investors, but you also can provide a great place for people to live and better a community. And you guys are obviously doing that. So I commend you.
Thanks. It's just about solving problems. That's what real estate is. So when we went there for 2 weeks, we were overwhelmed. We were like, oh my gosh, where do we even start? We just had a list, we got the system going, and then now we just keep solving problem after problem, and you fix those problems, and people are just so happy, and you really turn it around. It's awesome.
I'm sure.
You know, a safe place to live is so important. They brought that up multiple times. And so the lighting we have up, and then also we have a security guy that goes around, we have cameras, and the tenants love it. But we lost a lot of tenants initially. There were some tenants that didn't like it. There was cockroaches. We had to get rid of the cockroaches. They didn't like it, all the lighting and that. So yeah, that's why we went to 50% for a while, because we had to get a lot of people.
You don't just fix the units. You got to fix the bad tenants too.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, that's great. I think the pandemic has highlighted why multifamily is such a great asset class when it comes to commercial real estate. You're seeing retail, you're seeing office, they're just struggling. But people always need a place to live, especially the country has really bad housing problem. There's not enough supply for the demand. So I don't think there's a better asset class to be in right now. And that's obviously the case. You're leasing up 12 units a month. That's crazy.
It's a good problem to have.
That's a great problem to have. So we've kind of talked about, you know, your battle scars. Are there any more that you'd want to share? Any tips you could have for someone who's a first time operator of a 100 plus unit facility?
Yeah. So there was a lot of things we could have done better up front. I mean, we were drinking from a hose.
Yeah.
If we were to do a new deal, our due diligence wasn't sufficient enough. And also just not only looking at the properties, but to really get set up upfront, who is going to be your GC or who's going to be your subs for each of those areas. One of our partners is just extremely good at negotiating. So we could have done a lot of that negotiating to get the cost down early on, so that in day one, because we lost a fair amount of time up front. The GC we had might've turned his units a lot quicker, but they would have been crappy work and it would have been a lot more expensive. But we might have turned it better. We might have got more renting, people renting up quicker. So if we would have had a better structure up front, we would have done a better job.
Awesome. Is there, I guess, what's working for you when it comes to leasing up? Because 12 a month is great right now. Are there any like tips or tricks you can share with us? What's your kind of plan of attack?
Yeah. So you know what's working is Facebook ads.
We really
spend about $50 to $75 a week on Facebook ads. One of our partners doing it. And then I also do it. I just renew an ad once a week. I probably get 3 to 5 inquiries a day on people wanting to tour it,
wow,
fill out an application or whatever. It's been really, really good. Way better than apartments.com or some of those things. I don't even think we get calls. And then we have done concessions like a move-in special. So like prorate 1 free month of rent, but we're pretty much going to get rid of that pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
nice. And are these targeted ads on Facebook?
I think so. Our partner's running it, so I don't know exactly how he's doing it, but not spending a lot of money, but man, the return on investment has been amazing. So then we just get their phone number and have our property manager call and answer all their questions.
That's awesome.
Based off of the video that we have, or videos we have of the property that do the walkthrough. And we have it in English and Spanish, and we have testimonials. So there's other content around those Facebook ads too.
Yeah, we improved our Google reviews, got people to give us some Google reviews, improved the pictures. We could do more there. We just haven't because we've had enough.
Well, thanks for sharing that. That's great tip. I've also heard that Facebook is kind of the best place to be, both the targeted ads and marketplace, posting units on the marketplace. What are the goals for you two in the business? Is this a one-time deal or what's on the horizon here?
We'd like to buy more. We would like to buy more. We're just kind of waiting to see what's going to happen.
Right.
Like a lot of people. And some people are just moving forward. So maybe that's the wrong move. But for right now, we're waiting. So we need to hit 90% occupancy for 3 months and then we can refinance, get a lot lower, better. The rates are really crazy good right now. We're at 7% on a bridge. And we're hoping to get, what's it, 3.25. Yeah.
That'll make a big difference.
But yeah, we love it. We love multifamily.
So we are being more strategic now that COVID has kind of shut made things a little harder. So we've been doing a lot more work on trying to get our podcast up and running, have good content in there, our website. So we're doing things to be able to work on the raising private money piece of it. And then the next piece that we're going to put more focus on, having a deal stream coming in.
Yeah.
And maybe even hiring a VA to look at that. It may, right now, I don't know if we even have had a VA that we want to put a lot of focus on the deals coming our way, but we are want to get that running too. So we want to get the engine running on both the money raise and also the deal flow. So we're ready to go.
Nice. And the deal flow, are you doing that through broker relations?
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a target market you're looking for or just kind of?
We identified a number of markets. And most are in the Midwest or in Texas area, because right now we're looking at cash flow more so. You can have an opportunity almost anywhere. It's just a different type. But you have to have a lot more down if you're going to do a play in an area that has a lot more appreciation. If you're going to have one with a low cap rate, you're going to have to make sure you have a lot more down, but more work put into it. Otherwise, the cash flow won't be there to be able to support it.
Right.
And one of the things that we've kind of had an aha is we're really good at making things look amazing for not a lot of money.
I like that.
Yeah, like a light, well, it's probably light to medium value add, because we didn't really tear down any walls or reconstruct anything, but that's kind of like our niche, and a lot of people don't want to do that.
Yep, I think that's a great space to be, because usually you either get full value add, like a repositioning, or people just want a momentum play. So I think there definitely is a place to play in there. Definitely. And it's forced appreciation. So you can't argue with that.
Not at all.
So this time of the episode, I usually like to leave my listeners with action steps, something where they can actually go out and do something instead of just listening to a podcast for 30, 40 minutes and then going on with their life. So I guess the scenario, just think of someone, I guess yourselves 10 months ago, looking to get into multifamily, buy 100 plus unit complex. But maybe they're not doing it because maybe there's some limiting beliefs. There's a little fear that maybe they think they need to learn more or acquire the right connections. What would you say to these people, and what would you tell them they should do? Like, what's the most important step they need to take to get where you two are today?
I want to start with one thing, and that is, I think the first time, right now, we actually are looking at another opportunity as a limited partner.
Okay.
Even though we're already at GPs, the return as an LP is pretty dang good. And so with our 401k money, we have one deal that looks like we might be able to have a 19.4% return on our money.
Wow.
And so we're probably going to invest in it, even though we could invest in as a GP with money too. So I think sometimes people just need to be LPs, or at least start off with being LPs. So there's nothing wrong with being an LP, especially if you have money that's in your retirement account.
It's way less work.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
So I don't think it's when we first were LPs, we were already in the whole real estate play. And so we were saying, well, can you give us part of the GP? And they're like, why? What value do you add right now to us? Right? They didn't say those words, but essentially they weren't moving at all because they didn't, right? Because we had no value when we first got in as an LP. So don't be afraid to be an LP. It's a great way to start. But if you want to be a GP, mark networking, because you can find others that have done it before, training. So networking is the most important thing. Trying to raise money, well, what does that mean? You need to network first. You need to network with other people that are like-minded, that are brokers or that are doing deals. But you need to understand the lingo. You have to do, so there's a lot more networking, I think, that's required to start off.
I would say, yeah, as part of that networking too, maybe go have 5 conversations with people you don't know.
I like that. You know?
Just go meet 5 new people. How could I be of value? I'm trying to learn. Is there something I could do for you? Can I reach out? I don't know. Offer your services or whatever. Or go to a place or go on Facebook. I mean, there's so many multifamily groups on Facebook. They're all over the place. Send a private message and, hey, I'm trying to learn. Could I have this question about this or that I noticed on your deal? Could we talk for a few minutes?
I think that's really smart. And you know, you just got to step out of your comfort zone. And I think that's a great way to do it. Take your time out of your day to meet 5 new people and talk to them. And then to David's point, there's nothing wrong with being an LP. But if you are going to be on the GP, the general partner side, you got to bring value to the table. You can't just ask, can I be GP? Well, what are you going to bring? So bring value. And that kind of comes full circle in this conversation, because we mentioned that before. It's very important to make sure you're bringing value to any type of relationship or connection you're making.
Yes. Well, and on our GP, it's not like all of a sudden you get these people together and you know what everybody's going to do. So like next time we'll know, but it took a little while for everybody's role to evolve. Well, you're going to do this and you do this and you do this. And when we divided and delegated, it worked and it runs a lot more smoothly.
That's great. Yeah. It's important to be flexible in any type of partnership. Generally, when you go in, you think you're going to do one thing, and that's probably not going to be the way it turns up in the end. So I think that's great advice. Well, thank you both for sharing this very valuable information that even I took some great nuggets today. So, but before I let you go, can you just share with the listeners where they can find you?
Reigningfreedommoney.com.
Awesome. And you have a podcast too that's of the same name, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So if you go there, you'll see it. Yeah.
Yeah, website and a podcast. And really what we do is interview people who have either reached financial freedom or in the process of it. And
I like that.
We just want to inspire and motivate people to not have to work a W-2 and to have time and money freedom.
Yeah, we actually have one we're releasing this week that's a mindset one. And we have, it's actually a nephew of mine that was in prison for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Drugs and gun and the whole nine yard. And just to see his attitude and how he was able to get back on his feet afterwards. And he's just wonderful home now and just doing really great. But no matter where you're at, he's already looking at doing real estate now. And he's doing part of it now.
That's great.
There's no like a limited belief, like I can't do it. Anyone can do it. You just have to have the right mindset and do the right steps over time.
I couldn't agree with you more. A book that I always refer to people is a book called Mindset. She talks about the difference between a fixed and growth mindset. And I think it's very important.
Yeah, I've read that because you talked about it.
Yeah, great.
I got halfway through and I was like, okay, I need to finish.
Good. It's a great book. Well, thank you for sharing today and coming on the podcast. It's been very beneficial. So thank you.
You're welcome. Our pleasure.
Have a good one.
Thanks.
Okay.
You too.
See you later.
Bye.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and of course share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.